Kristen Shelvin, and this is the Mostly Mom Podcast. While my days are filled with many roles and responsibilities, Mostly Mom is my favorite title. We all have a story to share about finding goodness and beauty in our ordinary, everyday lives. So I'm taking some time to sit down with a fellow mom to discuss the good and the hard, the joys and the sorrows, what we are facing in our current season of motherhood, and the lessons we have learned along the way. I hope you are challenged, encouraged, and inspired by these conversations.
Sarah B., it's nice to have you here.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, thanks for saying yes.
Yeah.
I'd love to start by just hearing you tell your story.
Okay, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, about how to tell stories well, but especially your own story, how to be authentic about it, but also honoring your own experience. There's a reason that I've been thinking about it, we'll get to eventually. But I think the thing that stands out to me the most is just how we all have these moments where the story shifts, like the trajectory of your life or your story shifts so greatly that it's kind of shocking.
Yeah.
And I think I've had, like a lot of people, I've had several of those moments. I mean, like right now I'm, as we sit here, 46, and I have two adult children, 22. My oldest is 22. My youngest is 20. I had a lovely childhood. My mom was a teacher. My dad was a lumber salesman. He would go into various lumber companies and troubleshoot their overseas accounts. And so as a result of that, we would move a lot. We moved every 2 years until I was about 9 or 10. And then at that point, I have one brother, and he was going to be a freshman in high school. I've read through the lines a little bit of what my mom has told me, and I think she finally put her foot down and said, we're not moving anymore after this. I don't want to move these kids during high school, I think is where she was coming from. I'm very grateful for that. But yeah, I had a really lovely childhood until I didn't. And my dad actually passed away, died when I was 16. Yeah, he had cancer. It was very fast. He was diagnosed, and 6 weeks later, he was gone.
Wow.
Yeah, and it went from having this lovely childhood where I played with the kids down the street and, you know, stayed out, kind of that typical 80s, you stay out till the streetlights go off, you know, and then all of a sudden I had very adult responsibilities.
Yeah.
And that was... It, I think some of those adult responsibilities were of my own making. I have always been the personality that wants to take care of people, wants to fix things, wants to be the caretaker. So I think there are some of those things that I took on. Maybe I didn't have to, but I did. And then I think some of them were... My mom was trying to navigate immense grief the best she could, and some of it she was wildly successful at, and other areas she wasn't.
Yeah.
And so I think there was a need that had to be filled as a result of that. I actually went to work for an orthodontist at that time. I became an orthodontic assistant through some on-the-job training, took my x-ray certification. Such a weird job because I don't love being in people's mouths, but it served its purpose, and I was actually able to use that money that I made to help pay some of the bills, the medical bills that had been accumulating during those 6 weeks. Believe it or not, they were outrageous even only in 6 weeks.
I believe it.
I don't think my mom even knows that I paid those bills to this day.
Really?
Yeah, it's not funny. Anyways... It just, I think, it, after about two years, I had had enough. My mom got her feet underneath her. She was doing better. I didn't really want to be there anymore. And don't get me wrong, I was not an easy human at that point in my life. I mean, I was not an easy daughter. I wasn't the most gracious daughter. I was making decisions that were not what I would have chosen now as in my adult self, right? Mm-hmm. But this is going to age me a little bit. I actually got out a paper map, you know, like a big map of like the Northwest. And I decided, okay, I'm done. I'm going to go to college. So this is embarrassing. I got a piece of twine and measured out on the little scale on the map, you know, how far I could drive in 13 hours. Because I figured if my mom had any sort of trouble, I could come home in one day. I could probably drive 13 hours. Mm-hmm. So I took that piece of twine, put one end in Redmond, Oregon, where we lived, and drew a circle with the other end. So I had this great big circle of places I could go that I could get home in a day.
Wow.
And there were other options, you know, besides the one I chose, but my cousin was here at MSU. And so I thought, okay, I at least know somebody.
Yeah.
Right? And that's how I landed at MSU. And I remember I packed up my car, got everything in there, and took myself to college. My mom didn't come with me for a number of reasons. And I got about 2 hours out to Burns, and I pulled over and promptly threw up all over the side of the road because I was so scared. I now know that I was having a complete panic attack.
Yeah.
Through, you know, and I had to tell myself in that moment, like, this, I have done harder things.
Yeah.
I have done harder things, right?
And you're 18-ish?
Yeah.
At this point,
yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
To say those things to yourself as an 18-year-old, that's a lot.
It was the only way that I could get myself to a place where I could get back in the car and drive again. Mm-hmm. And I learned to use that. I mean, I think I pulled over probably, well, at least two times that I remember, one of them being in West Yellowstone, which was so embarrassing because I was in front of a bunch of people. But anyway, I did finally make it here. And ended up getting my undergraduate degree at MSU. I met my husband there. We very quickly had our two kids. And then we, you know, were kind of thrown into that stage that you get in marriage where you are raising kids and going through life and the days pass by very quickly. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes the days don't pass by quickly, but the years go by really fast. Yeah, and you know, I think we both brought our own stuff to the marriage that we didn't really know how to navigate, and there were some hard years in there. I would say that the next sort of turning point was when my oldest was in first grade, and her teacher came to me and said, "Sarah, your daughter doesn't know how to read, and she can't spell." Mm-hmm. And I knew this. I mean, I was a classroom teacher, right? And I'd been working with her and doing everything I knew how to do to help her. And nothing was working. Nothing yeah. was working. And it was terrifying. So we finally took out a loan, actually, to get a neuropsych. Can you believe that we had to take out a loan to get a neuropsych exam? That's how expensive they are.
Wow. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got her evaluated, and I remember walking, we were in downtown Spokane, and we went up this big elevator, and it was silent. It was just my husband and I were in the elevator, it was silent. We walk in this really clinical, kind of cold building, and the guy leans across the table and puts his hand kind of out in front of us, like, ooh, this is going to be bad, you know? And he said, "Your daughter's IQ is great, actually above average, but her reading and spelling skills are so low, she will probably never learn how to read."
Mm.
Yeah. We were absolutely devastated. I didn't hear anything else
yeah.
that guy said during the meeting. We walked out of the building, and it took me a few days. I had to recalibrate, right, a little bit and go, wait a second. Like, the diagnosis, yes, okay, dyslexic, fine, we can figure that out. But that the idea of the prognosis being that she will never read mm-hmm. was absolutely unacceptable mm-hmm. to me. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Especially being a teacher at that time and believing, and I still to this day believe wholeheartedly that every human can learn to read if given the right opportunity.
Yep.
Anyway, I searched all over Spokane for somebody to help her. And there were people that, you know, claimed that they could do that, but they were not what I was looking for, not the caliber that I was looking mm-hmm. for. And so I went back to school and I became an educational therapist specializing in dyslexia remediation at that time. And the school that I worked for, Northwest Christian Schools, they were so lovely. They actually let me start a program for dyslexic students in that school, which meant that I could keep my job, but help my daughter and also help other kids at the same time.
That's beautiful.
It was such a sweet, sweet time of my life. Mm-hmm. I look back on those years at Northwest and I'm very, very grateful for that family of teachers and staff there. Yeah, yeah, they're incredible people. Couple years later, though, my husband was offered a job here, mm-hmm. and so we did decide to move. But I knew, Kristen, that I couldn't go back to the classroom and teach. I yeah. felt like I had this, well, sort of niche skill set. It's not so much anymore, but at that time
at that
it was.
Time, yeah.
Yeah. And I realized I can't go back into a setting where I know that 1 in 5 of my students are going to be struggling approximately, right, mm-hmm. with this. And I can't go back in and know that I won't be able to help them the way that I know how within that structure, mm-hmm. right? So that's when I opened Gallatin Valley Learning Solutions, where we met.
What year was that?
2014.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2014. And then I started out on my own, and then I actually went back to school again and got a second part of that educational therapy piece that allowed me to do evaluation and screening for dyslexia. And I met I like to call her my partner in crime, Sarah Alexander, mm-hmm. our associate director, and she really was the one who was the catalyst in helping me transition Gallatin Valley Learning Solutions to a nonprofit. Because all along, my vision was to help families like ours who had to take out a loan, yeah. right, for that neuropsych exam.
Yep.
And be able to offer some scholarship funding for things like evaluations, intervention, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was referencing that idea of having to tell myself, like, I've done harder things. Mm-hmm. I had to do that so many times when I started yeah. Gallatin Valley Learning Solutions and yeah. Reed, Montana. It was so scary. It was terrifying.
You were pioneering in a lot of ways.
In some ways, I would say yes. I really tried to surround myself with people who knew what they were doing. Like, for example, I think it was 8 different accountants, and I said, I need an accountant for my business, but it kind of comes with some strings, so let me tell you before you say yes. And because I wanted someone that would come alongside me and let me watch them do the books so that someday when I did finally turn them over, I would understand what I was turning over and what I was seeing. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to find people like that who are willing to pour into me and help come alongside me. So yes, in some ways, maybe pioneering, but I think I would look at it differently in that I just was so blessed that people could see the vision and wanted to come alongside and help.
And join you in that
yeah.
vision. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And have the heart of a teacher.
Yes.
To teach you.
Yes.
As you were building this thing.
Totally. Yes. And, you know, it's exciting now. I love what I do. I love working with families and helping being a support to them. I would say my most recent challenge that I've told you is that I, as of a couple weeks ago, I'm officially divorced.
It's okay. That's hard.
And so that coping mechanism that I referenced about telling myself that I've gone through harder things, it didn't work anymore. It didn't work.
Yeah.
Because nothing I've been through is as hard as this. So I think I was reflecting on it this morning, and I think I have instead had to learn to press in to the women who I am honored to call friends and family, right? Mm-hmm. I have had to learn to lean on them in a way that I have never done before.
Yeah.
And as hard as that has been to be on the receiving end of the help mm-hmm. and the comfort, I mean, that's what I do all day, right? Is help and comfort.
Yeah.
So to be on the receiving end of that has been hard, but it has been a huge blessing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has redefined what I understand as community.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't lump everybody into this, but at least me as a Christian, I know that, you know, I love Jesus but I also kind of threw around the word community for a long time because we just use it, you know, and we use it without thinking about it mm-hmm. sometimes. And I didn't realize until the last several months that what it was like to sit in the mire and the muck with other people, what that kind of community looked mm-hmm. like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think my biggest challenge right now is to stay, one, connected in that community and not isolate.
Yeah.
But also to maintain some sense of community for my kids who are adults, but are they? Because they're 20 and 22. You know, that weird space of, mm-hmm. yes, you're an adult because legally we say you are, but are you really?
You still have a lot of things to figure out when
Absolutely.
You're at that age. Yeah. You
Absolutely.
Still need your mom
yeah.
to be your mom.
Exactly. And, you know, that you're so right. And I think there have been times recently too, where, you know, as I'm navigating my own grief and my own stuff, for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. I haven't always done the greatest job navigating theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm reframing it as an opportunity. I have been given many opportunities to say, I messed up.
Yeah.
And to model, like, I am so sorry. And here's how I think you feel from that, but I want to hear your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And here's how I would like to repair. But again, what does repair look like for you?
Mm-hmm.
Because it might look different for you than what I think.
Yeah.
And those conversations are super humbling.
Yeah.
And hard.
Yeah.
But I hope they'll look back on them and go, and just be grateful for them. I don't know. You never know, right? You don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. But you're, sounds like, you know, as you approach your kids, it's a way of relating that's with connection
mm-hmm.
and not like the power over, let me tell you how this is. It's definitely coming alongside and saying, modeling having to be human. Like,
absolutely.
I don't have this all figured out. I'm going to screw it up. And can we just revisit
yeah.
these things together?
Absolutely. And, you know, as I'm sitting here talking to you, Kristen, I can see the parallel between what I just told you about my kids and what I dealt with my mom, right?
Mm-hmm.
So her going through that grief and showing up well sometimes and showing up not so well other times, right? And
yep.
And so I think that's part of this also for me, in that I am working really hard to show up in ways for them
mm-hmm.
That were harder for her.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also modeled that apology later, right?
Yeah.
But that has happened with us. And so it's interesting that that would carry over that way.
Yeah. And I think it's good too for me to remember as a mom that God is outside of time and he can repair and fix and redeem years
yeah.
that have gone by.
Yeah.
And We are not that way. And so we feel those years in a different way. Mm-hmm. But I've seen it, that things can get fixed and cleaned up and cared for later in a weird, bizarre way that I can only explain that it's God that can do that.
Mm-hmm. No, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. I've seen it too. I think when it's, for me, I'll speak for myself again, when it's me going through it, it's harder to trust, right? That repair can occur. And it's not, I'm not saying there's been anything so major that, you know, it's not that. It's just these, I'm so hard on myself about these moments in which I really want to show up well, right? But I am falling apart. I'm laughing. It's not funny. Or I'm absolutely falling apart, right? And you have to, and sometimes I'm great about compartmentalizing and saying, okay, I will give myself time to deal with that later, and I'm going to show up and be here for you in this moment. But this last piece of the divorce has challenged me in that way so beyond what I ever thought would happen.
So
it's interesting. It's been a lot of growth, and I know there'll be a lot more to come, and that kind of freaks me out, if I'm being honest, because the growth is so uncomfortable.
Can I ask a question about when your dad passed away?
Absolutely.
So you were 16 and you jumped right into helping and helper mode and working and helping your mom. Did you have any time to grieve then? Did you have time to grieve later?
That's a great question. So I think, did I have the time at 16? Yes. Did I take the time at 16? No. What ended up happening was in about, well, actually, you know what it was that kicked it off? When my oldest, again, turned 16, something clicked in me that I realized, oh boy, this, I looked at her and thought, she's 16. There's no way she could carry this, right? And that kicked off an entire new wave of grief and healing that had to happen for me. But I would say that I didn't fully grieve that or fully, I don't necessarily want to say heal that wound, because I think that that can project that we're over it. I don't think we're ever over it, but I don't think I grieved it appropriately, let me put it that way, until that time when she was 16.
And I would imagine, too, with what you're going through now, grief revisits in some different ways.
Oh, hugely.
And you're used to that grief, so you know what it looks like and you know when it hits, but it's a different, you're grieving different things now.
It is. However, I think that there are parts of this process, how do I want to say this, where it's easy for me now to go, okay, this is grief in the present, right? Like right now, I'm grieving the fact that, you know, we're moving out of our home, right? That's a now grief. But there are things attached to this process, let's say financially, that trigger fear from the past. And so my reactions are much bigger than what they should be in the moment. And that's a huge clue to me that, okay, this is historical grief too, right?
Like the memory of what happened before coming back.
That almost paralyzing sense that comes, that's always a huge clue. Like, oh my gosh, okay, this is that not dealt with stuff.
Thank you for sharing all of that.
I think it's important for people to hear about, you know, I have not found the answer, but I am struggling to reconcile loving Jesus and being divorced. You know, and I think it's important for people to hear that and know that there are people in this position, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that people don't know there's people in this position, but sometimes we don't hear this side of it, right? It's either on the other side where, oh, I have it all figured out now, you know, or I stayed for 400 years and I was miserable for all 400.
You can love Jesus.
Right.
And also have gone through a divorce.
Yes. I think there are some churches that do that well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the churches that I have historically been a part of did not do that well. And so there is a piece of shame surrounding that, right? Mm-hmm. That you're exactly right. It's hard to be able to hold it together versus you're either one or the other.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think you're right that it's not talked about because of perceived shame, perceived condemnation. And so we won't tell that part of the story because it exposes some things that are uncomfortable to talk about with each other sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's important that we get comfortable with the uncomfortable. And I'm learning that even more. I thought, wow, okay, I do this for my job, right? I talk about the uncomfortable all day, every day. I thought I had that nailed.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Mm-mm. You can feel it, right? Like the way that you and I know each other is through Gallatin Valley Learning Solutions. And I have three very different kids.
Lovely
and they kids. All have all these beautiful, lovely, wonderful things. And they each have kind of a, like every kid, right? Like this thing that you find yourself working on or this roadblock that you keep running into. And with our middle, it was finding out that she was dyslexic after a couple of years of struggle. And so sitting down with her to work on the homework or work on the therapies at home, and you can feel it in your body and you can feel it in your spirit and your soul.
Brutal.
Like, oh, I don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't want to do it. And it was we kind of have to make it through, but we also have to find some joy somehow in this.
Absolutely. It changes the dynamic between parent and child. Yeah.
Yeah. But when you can recognize that feeling and name that feeling, then all of a sudden you can say, oh, I don't really want to be here, but we are here together. So let's figure out how to do this well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely hard. And I think that's one of the reasons I have so much, what's the word I want to use? I think it's compassion. I have a lot of compassion for families with these kids because I do have that unique viewpoint of being in the trenches with my child and the toll, understanding the toll that it takes, not just on the child, but on the family.
Yeah.
And I think there's a toll on the siblings sometimes that isn't talked about as well.
Mm-hmm.
I oftentimes think about my son and the many, many times that he was dragged around to appointments. And, you know, I think there's a toll on them too. And I think recognizing that, acknowledging that, talking through that with them is really important. And I'm able to say that to families, you know, have you talked about this with your other kids? And, you know, hopefully it's helpful.
Well, I think it's good. So we had the dyslexia piece with our middle, and we have a seizure disorder with our youngest.
Mm.
And those two in particular, I see both of those things for them, that they have a different measure of compassion and understanding and empathy for other people in a different way than they probably would have if they didn't carry this thing with them.
I absolutely 100% agree and see that also. I also think that there's an emotional intelligence that comes with, I would say that it's with empathy, understanding how someone else might feel in a specific situation that I think is heightened when you have something like that going on too.
Yeah. How's your daughter now? What is she up to now?
Okay, this is the best part of the story. She is a senior in college, actually. She is graduating with this spring with a degree in psychology, and she is graduating with honors.
So great.
I know. It's really, you know, she was lucky that she had the tools that she had, but she is the reason that she is successful. She then took those tools
Yep.
and has worked extremely hard to get to where she's at, to figure out how things work for her. And
mm-hmm.
I could not be more proud of both of my kids, but yeah, since we're coming up on graduation with her, I could not be more proud of the fact that she's graduating from college.
Yeah.
Coming from that initial meeting where we were told basically to find job skills for her because she'd never read.
Yeah.
And so it's a huge, huge turnaround.
And she is likely headed to grad school, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yep. She'll be, yep. Hopefully, yeah, we'll see where she lands, but definitely some sort of graduate school. So.
And your son is in college too. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yes, he is. And you know, he surprised me because he didn't love high school. He was my kiddo who just didn't see the point in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I think he just didn't really, he didn't latch on to any one subject. And then he went off to college. And he decided that he wanted to become a radiologist and loves science, loves his chemistry, biology, all these classes, and is thriving. He's at MSU now. He actually transferred to MSU this year to finish his undergrad there. But it's so fun to watch him find this passion and this area that he is really good at, you know, after really just not loving mm-hmm. high school. It's been an interesting transition as a parent to watch him kind of come into his own.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's been fun, really fun.
Was there one thing that he discovered that kicked him into radiology that like opened his eyes to that as an option?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't think it was one thing necessarily. I think that there were several things that he thought he wanted to do. So at one point, he wanted to go into the military. And then that shifted quite abruptly, actually, and he decided he didn't. And then I think that started him down the path of, okay, but now what?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, he's had people, speaking of community, people pour into his life that he respects and loves. And I think that he's had some examples of people that have been in the medical community and that kind of mm-hmm. thing. And I think just over time, that's where he landed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're a young mom caught up in diapers, dinners, and the daily grind, it's easy to forget that your soul needs care too. If you're an older mom who has raised a family and built a life, perhaps it's time to invest in yourself. Maybe you're new to the Bible, or maybe you're coming back to it after years away. Perhaps you're just ready to learn. Yellowstone Theological Institute believes that moms are leaders at home, at church, at work, and in the world. Programs at YTI are accessible to students from diverse backgrounds as they explore their faith through hands-on classroom learning, community involvement, and mentorship. Sit with trusted biblical scholars and mentors who value the weight and wonder of motherhood, and learn the foundations of Christian theology in a warm, welcoming environment. Multiple academic programs are available. The Diploma of Christian Theology program arms students with a thorough foundation and includes 30 hours of classes. You can audit theological classes designed to encourage your heart, deepen your faith, and equip you to lead without the pressure of grades or papers. You can also pursue a Master of Arts or Master of Divinity degree, or one of several new certificate programs. Whether you're looking for spiritual formation, leadership development, or education, there's a seat waiting for you. You can explore current class offerings for the 2026 winter term at yellowstonetheology.org. Registration opens November 3rd and classes begin January 12th. YTI would like to offer you a 50% discount on auditing any class you choose for the winter term. Your cost would be just $100. Simply go online to yellowstonetheology.org and register to audit a class,
then email Melissa at ythi.org. That's M-E-L-I-S-S-A at ythi.org. Let her know your name, mention the Mostly Mom podcast, and your discount will be applied.
Can I ask you some questions?
You can ask me anything you want.
So all of my guests get these questions ahead of time, and some of you, I know, prepare really well, and some of you are thoughtful and prayerful and think through things, but don't necessarily have anything written down, which I love both ways. You've answered so many questions already, which I love. I love that I get to sit back and just listen. You talked about some of the joys with your work, mm-hmm. the joy of comforting and coming alongside and encouraging these families. When you were in those busy seasons of motherhood, what was a deep joy in that season?
Oh, it's easy. Laughter.
Yeah.
My kids are so funny.
Yeah.
They are hysterical. And even the hardest times that we've had, mm-hmm. one of them would say something. They have kind of a dry, sort of sarcastic sense of humor. And mm-hmm. we would just die mm-hmm. laughing. Yeah. Absolutely laughter.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's good.
Yeah.
I love it when the goofy things set everybody off giggling at my house. And it gets ridiculous. Like,
I know.
No one can stop.
Isn't it fun?
What are we even laughing about?
Those are my favorite moments, though. I
great.
Love them.
Yeah. Yep. You talked a lot about having to pivot and having to sort of reevaluate and shift. You created this beautiful new thing with Gallatin Valley Learning Solutions and Reed Montana. Is there anything else that you have dreamt of doing that you haven't had a chance to do yet?
I have a lot of things that I would love to do. A lot of them revolve around travel. Mm-hmm. I love to travel. So there are a lot of places around the world that I'd love to get to at some point.
Yeah.
I think professionally, I would love, and I don't know how to do it, but I would love to see a model of what we are doing be available to all kids throughout the state. An affordable, replicable, successful model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because those therapies are not cheap.
No, they are not. Especially, you know, our rates right now are about 40% lower than the national average.
Yeah.
And they're still not where they should be, in my mind, personally.
Yeah.
So, So I would love to scale it, but in a way that every kid could get it.
I love that. Mm. What is a skill or talent that you'd love to master?
Oh, okay. Well, I have two. I am a knitter. I love to knit. But do you know what steeking is?
No, I don't.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so you knit this, like think of a cardigan.
Uh-huh.
You knit it across the front, but then you knit it in a certain way where you end up cutting it to make the, it's terrifying because you're cutting through what you're knitting. Someday I'm going to do it. Someday I'm going to learn, but I'm too afraid right now to cut through what I've already knit.
Does it turn into like this fuzzy creation?
No, you steek it and then pull it back and it just looks, have you ever seen those cardigans where there's, you know, there's buttons on one side and then very neat buttonhole?
Yeah.
It's that, but you knit it in one piece, then cut it and turn it under kind of and
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm just afraid.
I would be afraid too.
And then the other one is I love to Nordic ski.
Yes.
But I classic ski all the time and I do Nordic, you know, the side-by-side
skate skiing.
Skate skiing.
Yeah.
But I'm not great at it. I'm not great at skate skiing, so I want to get better at that.
Oh, let's go do that together.
I'd love to.
Because I'm really fumbly on
Me
skate
too.
Skis. And I need a friend
especially
to fumble
uphill.
Together with.
Yes. Okay, let's do it. I'm in.
Oh, so I have this question that I like to ask about quote unquote self-care.
Okay.
Knowing that that can mean a lot of different things mm-hmm. for a lot of different people depending on the season. And I do think moms need to take care of themselves. With all the things that you've carried, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your kids, a kiddo that needs extra help, mm-hmm. and then running a business. What did it look like for you to take care of yourself in those busy seasons to make sure that you were keeping yourself together a little bit?
Yeah, I think this is an area that I've struggled with periodically. Mm-hmm. I haven't been great about it forever. I would say in the last 10 years or so, it has been running. When I run, that is when my brain turns off, mm-hmm. and I can really just be in the moment. And there's something about putting one foot in front of the other and getting yourself absolutely exhausted to the point of almost collapse that is weirdly cathartic, mm-hmm. for me. But I would say that's only been in the last 10 plus years. Prior to that, I really struggled with that. I really grew up with this idea that moms don't get breaks, mm-hmm. really. And I bought into that, mm-hmm. to a large degree. And I wore myself out. So yeah. Running has really helped me kind of get over that hump.
Do you race too?
I haven't in the last couple of years, but yes, I have. Lots of half marathons, a couple of marathons, but I like the half distance. It's easier to train for it. The full marathon, it's like a full-time job
it's
to train
a big
for
deal.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
good for you. That's fun. I didn't know you were a runner.
Yeah.
So your biggest challenge right now is navigating this new territory.
Yeah.
What does support look like for you? Mm. You've got this great community, mm-hmm. Of women around you. Mm-hmm. In this season, what does it look like to get the help you need? Are there some things that you can look forward to in the next season?
Yeah. I think as far as the question, you know, and what does it look like to get the support? Right now, it's all about me being willing to talk to people about what I need. Mm-hmm. It's not easy, right? It's not easy. I just yesterday, I'll be real honest, I went and looked at a house to rent and got in the car and absolutely fell apart, you know, over mm-hmm. the grief of losing my home. Mm-hmm. And I had to call my dear friend in Spokane and say, I'm falling apart. I need you to just sit in this with me for a minute, mm-hmm. you know, and she did. She's loved, you know, it. So I think right now it's just the willingness to be transparent enough to talk about the things that aren't working or not going well. And I think that support just comes from people. I don't even care what they say, mm-hmm. just being in that moment, right? Mm-hmm. Just for a second to know that you're not alone crying in your car.
Presence and availability.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then in regard to, you know, like, what do I have to look forward to? Is that, I think mm-hmm. that's, I think I have so much to look forward to. I think I just, right now I'm learning to reframe that. Like yesterday, it was hard because I'm losing my home, but I can reframe that and go, yeah, but I'm also gaining a new home where I'm going to create new memories mm-hmm. with my kids, with my, you know, like, with my cat, you know? I mean, I think there are a lot of things to look forward to, but right now, it's harder to see them as things to look forward to right. rather than things that are just happening because of what I'm going through.
And not that you have to spin it, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to spin it into something that it's not, but you can choose to spin elements
exactly
of what you're in the middle of and say, I can find a way to make this.
Yes. And I think that's a really important distinction because I think that, I don't want to use the word, I think that idea of like toxic positivity is thrown mm-hmm. around kind of a lot. But I think there's an element to that, right? I think that this idea that we have to be positive or we have to find the positive in everything to the detriment of feeling our emotions and healing. That's not what we're talking about at all, right?
It's both just at the same time
exactly.
again.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. It's both and. Mm-hmm. And we can, yeah. Yeah. I agree.
I'm sure that you are filled with good advice. With all of the years that you have under your belt as being a mom, mm. What is some good advice that you could pass along? Good advice you were given, good advice you picked up along the way.
I think the biggest things, and I sort of already alluded to this, but I think the biggest thing is to be willing to acknowledge when you've messed up, but also be willing to do the repair. There's a difference between an I'm sorry and a heartfelt, thought through apology that comes with repair. And I think that that is true at any age and stage of childhood, because we are human and we are going to mess up.
Yeah. Yeah. And to not be surprised when we do.
Oh, that's so true. I'm still surprised sometimes, though. Are you?
Oh, all the time. What? Why did you just do that? Why did you just say that? Like, so hard on myself. When, again, I wouldn't say that to a friend. I wouldn't say that to one of my daughters.
No.
But we're hard on ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's something that you wish you could have done differently?
You know, honestly, I think in the early days of being a mother, maybe not just even in the early days, maybe up until the last 5-ish years, I put so much pressure on myself to have my home be a certain way, to have my, you know, career be a certain way, to have, you name it, right? It was that outside pressure of, this is how I, as a Christian mother, should be presenting myself to the world. I wish that I would have given less credence to that, and I wish that I would have been more present in a way that was authentic to what my kids needed, not what the what I perceived the world needed to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's something that you wish you could have known earlier on?
There's so much. It's hard to nail down one thing, right? I don't know. Can we come back to that one?
We can skip it or we can come back.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. I feel like different seasons have different answers for this question too. But what is something that surprised you about motherhood?
This is maybe going to sound crazy, but I was surprised, very surprised, by how much I really love being a mom.
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't anticipate that that would be who I was. I mean, we could overanalyze it, right? And look back at all the things. But I just never really thought I would be the kind of person who just relished in their children. And I am. I still am today.
Yeah.
And I'm so surprised, even in this moment while we're sitting here, at how much I love those two human beings.
I would say the same thing.
Really?
I was not one of
those
good to hear. Girls growing up that was like, I cannot wait to get married. I can't wait to have kids. It was never that I didn't want those things, but it was not this like rush to get there. And so when I did get there, and I remember just each one of my girls holding each of them and just thinking, this is wild.
Like, yes.
This is my heart in my hands. Like,
oh my gosh, I can relate to that so deeply.
Yeah. And each one comes and you think your heart just blows up again and expands more.
Yeah, and how is that possible?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've never had someone else kind of relate to that on that level. I think a lot of my friends, you know, they knew they wanted to be moms and they were just so excited. And I mean, I didn't even really babysit. I didn't change a diaper until my daughter was born.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's how, you know, I just didn't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just was, I just did not realize the capacity for loving another human being that was within me, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So being an older mom, and not older in age, but a mom of older kids, What is your advice for navigating that season of having kids who are, like you said, not quite adults on their own yet, but they're still not at home, under 18, under your charge? What's your advice for those years?
You know, I think the thing that has worked the best for me is to ask a lot of questions. So instead of, you know, I do tend to be more type A. I like to have a plan. Yep. I like to execute things efficiently. And that does not bode well relationally with a young adult child. So to go in from a posture of questioning versus, and I don't mean like interrogation questioning, but
curiosity.
Curiosity is a better way to say it. Tell me how you feel about that. What do you think might be a solution? What are some ways that you're thinking about solving that? Do you want my help? That's a huge one, right? Do you want my advice? Usually the answer is no. So
sometimes they just need to say it out loud.
So I think, I think I like your word better of coming in with curiosity. I think that would be my biggest piece of advice.
I need that advice right now. To come in with curiosity and good questions and not, well, this is what you should do.
It's not easy.
It's not.
Especially if you tend to be more that personality, right?
Yes. Raising my hand. Yes. I am that way for sure. Are you ready for the rapid fire?
I am so ready. I have no idea what you're going to ask me, but I will do it.
Just answer these as quick as you can.
Okay.
What's the first thing you do in the morning?
Oh, I hate to admit it, but it's check my email.
You get your phone out.
I know. Yeah. I hate that. But yes, I do.
It's honest.
It
That's
is.
Good.
Yeah.
What is the last thing that you do at night?
Almost always it's read.
Do you make it very far or do you fall asleep pretty quick?
It depends on the night, but most nights I do okay. Let's say mediocre.
Are you like a one book a week girl?
At times, yes.
Okay.
At times, other times, like right now, I don't get too far before I fall asleep.
Yeah.
Just a lot going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is saving the day right now? A life hack, a habit, a ritual?
Friends.
That's a good answer.
Mm-hmm.
What is something that people get wrong about you?
I think people think I'm a real outgoing extrovert. I am not. I do not. I love people, love them deeply, but I do not get my energy from being around a lot of people. So I really need that time, like running or reading or knitting, to recharge and be kind of alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're overwhelmed, caught in a moment of anxiety or stress. What is the first thing you do?
Right now, pray. It wasn't always that way. Went through a really hard season in my faith. Really tough season. 3 or 4 years of just struggle. But right now, pray.
What's your favorite time of day?
Right before I fall asleep.
What are three things that you're grateful for right now?
Oh, gosh. This is easy. Definitely my kids. They are, first and foremost, my kids. My mom, she's 82 years old, and she is still showing up for me in ways that I didn't expect her to at this age and stage. And I think three, back to my other answer, my dear, sweet friends and family. I say family in there because I have a cousin who is like a sister to me, and I would definitely lump her into that category as well.
Is your mom close or is your mom still in Oregon?
No, she's still in Oregon. Okay. But we talk every day on the phone.
Describe an ordinary everyday moment that brings you joy.
I have right now a porch swing, and if you look out across our porch right now, the trees are so beautiful. And I have sat with so many people on that porch swing and had such good conversations. I will always have a porch swing because of that. Even if it's not on a porch, even if it's on a patio.
Yeah.
I will always have a porch swing.
Yeah. Yeah. Those porch moments are good.
They're so good.
Yep.
Yeah.
What else? Anything we forgot to talk about?
Oh, I don't think so. Not that I can think of.
It was great to visit with you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank
you for
coming.
It's lovely to visit with you as always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad we had time for more than just the coming and the going conversation.
I know. It's interesting, isn't it, how you can be around someone that way for, and then just really not know them deeply, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Glad you were here.
Thank you.
A huge thank you to my guests for taking time out of their busy lives to sit for a conversation with me. It's a delight, joy, and privilege to have you join me. The Mostly Mom Podcast is a production from Ordinary Everyday Studio. Find us on Instagram and online at ordinaryeveryday.studio. Audio and editing by Logan Tomorrow. Thank you for listening.